Hi, this is Rebecca. I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, and excited to be working as the Executive Director of Crosswalk America. We have a lot of interesting plans ahead. The journey continues. With the introduction of our film later in 2007, we hope to get the message of compassionate and inclusive Christianity out to a whole lot more people and to spur conversations and hopefully get people to act.
Hi, this is Eric, and since the walk, I have gotten back into my pastorhood at Scottsdale Congregational United Church of Christ in Scottsdale, Arizona, and also I've been working very hard on a book about the walk and the, kind of the Phoenix Affirmations meets the walk called Asphalt Jesus, Finding a New Christian Faith Along the Highways of America. That's taken most of my time. I just sent off the final proof of that to the publisher yesterday, actually. And I'm also working at directing a new initiative that's a collaborative project between Crosswalk America and the Ocotillo Center for Exploring Spirituality, the Arts, and Christian Worship that's going to be, you'll probably be hearing a lot more about in the coming year. And it's a video casting, a webcasting initiative.
Hi, this is Brad Wishon. It is 1 year later. I am still finding myself absorbed in Crosswalk work now that the board is really trying to solidify the organization. I find our efforts to be something that brings me great joy and great hope, as well as feels daunting sometimes. So it's almost like we're just starting to walk all over again. However, one thing that the walk taught me that I carry forward always in my life is that even what seems impossible can be done. And you get the right group of people together and get them walking, not in lockstep, but get them walking together and caring about the same things, and you can do anything. And so I'm really thrilled now to be a part of continuing that. I'm also continuing as pastor of the church. We've moved to a model of being co-pastors. That's an exciting change, and life goes on.
Hi, this is Ray Gentry at home in Scottsdale, Arizona. Scottsdale Congregation United Church of Christ is taking up a little bit of my time. I'm now the chairman of the Board of Trustees, so busy, you know, being plumber, carpenter, and et cetera. But happy to be home, happy to be busy. Love my church and all the people there, as I did love the walk and all the people on it. And I still get pretty excited every time I hear the word crosswalk. It still means quite a bit to me. I suppose it always will. There's times I would like to grab some people and pick them up and shake them a little bit and say, hey, do you really understand what this is all about? You know, we went out and did some great things, and I think some people were not paying attention. I don't know. There's times I think maybe we got to go out and maybe do it again or something, but right. Just finished my income tax, and I want to throw out, I saw where I'd made a few contributions to Crosswalk this year and last year. And I want everybody else to do the same.
Hi, I'm Katrina. I'm currently in Orange, California at Chapman University, where I'm finishing up my spring semester of my second year here. And I'm majoring in peace studies and sociology. I just got back from South Africa in January, which was really fun and amazing. And just trying to get ready for finals and then this semester. And I might be going to D.C. for an internship sort of program with Greenpeace this summer. So I'm pretty excited about that.
This is Merrill Davison, and I'm in my favorite coffee shop in Phoenix, Arizona. I've been busy with my church, Asbury, involved with the Valley Interfaith Project. I also took a couple weeks to go to New Orleans to help rebuild. I manage an office of volunteers now, which takes up a few hours a week. And other than that, things are beautiful. Still hike Piesowa Peak a lot.
This is Megan Pritchard in Seattle. I am working at Sightline Institute, which is a sustainability think tank based in the Northwest, and about the Northwest. And I like that job a lot. I'm executive assistant and office administrator. Very small group of people, really a nice group of people, and I like that a lot. And so, of course, yesterday I told them all that I was quitting because I've been accepted to seminary at Pacific School of Religion and will be starting there in the fall. So I will leave this job in August and head south.
Excellent.
And she's on a
Megan
got a presidential scholarship, their highest scholarship.
Yeah, it's covering my tuition for all 3 years.
Right on.
Yeah.
The spiritual future of America is in your hands.
We're all in trouble.
And I think you probably get credit for having the most unique and interesting way into getting a scholarship, Megan. I think it's awesome. Yeah.
Their interest essay was what I did on my summer vacation.
Yeah. Hi, this is Scott. I'm in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, and I've spent the majority of the time since the walk working on the film, and we're quite a ways along with that. I have most of the content in place, and we've started to use what we have to do some real active fundraising, and we've got some real excitement around what we've been showing to people, so we're very excited about the prospects coming up for the end of this year when the film comes out, which will be in August.
This is Chris Brown, back in Scottsdale, Arizona. Besides back working at a rec center, I'm stretched really thin, doing a lot of different things and having a great time doing it. When I got back, I helped out with Crosswalk America with Scott, going through some footage from the walk and sending it back down to Green Valley. And I'm also really helping out with the Ocotillo Project, doing Renegade Cinema, back at the church doing the studio. And besides that, I'm interning once a week at the City of Scottsdale cable channel, working a couple times a week at night for a upscale nightlife magazine, and I'm in pre-production with a few other film people around Scottsdale for a documentary about cannabis culture, the history of the hemp plant within human society, and the industrial applications.
This is Ray Gentry again. Driving the RV, I got to see a lot of more scenery than maybe the walkers really got to see. I don't know. Big panoramic window. I really love the whole United States. The scenery is great from the get-go to Washington, D.C. I love the greenery of the Midwest. I know you folks didn't care too much to walk in that high humidity, but the scenery was beautiful. The people we met were beautiful. My favorite memory is kind of selfish maybe, but on one of our days off I spent in, I think it was Greencastle, Indiana, the lady's house. She was the city attorney, and her husband was a caseworker, and they let me use their big pond. He gave me fishing tackle and a little boat to float around in, and I just caught every fish in that little pond and put them back, and I still remember that very vividly. It was a great day.
This is Rebecca, and my favorite memory is from earlier in the walk, and it was from talking to a woman who attended a very fundamentalist church, and after attending worship there, I questioned why anyone would want to worship in a church like that and felt really dejected, and then spoke with her later, and she mentioned that she loved the Phoenix Affirmations and that her homosexual son had come out to her and her husband a few years back, and the husband had disowned him. And she was proud of what we were doing, and we were walking for her. And she was such a compelling example of motherly love for her son, and knowing that what was being taught in her church did not feel right in her heart, but living in a community, being part of a family, and attending a church where her views, she felt, could not be listened to. And it really opened my eyes to the fact that no matter where you go and who you talk to, that you really need to question your assumptions about what someone might feel or believe. And just because they live in a place or go to a church or part of a community that looks like they have a certain set of views, that you don't know what's in each person's heart. And so as we talk to people, we can really find that out.
Well, this is Eric Elmas, and I think my favorite memory is kind of a stretch, a stream of memories, all from walking in the more conservative areas of the country, particularly the Bible Belt, just because it was so surprising to me and I think the rest of us how much support we received there, how many people really resonated with the Phoenix Affirmations that we did not count on happening. And it really opened my eyes to how many people are yearning, and kind of like with Rebecca's story, I mean, from a woman from a fundamentalist church, where there's lots of people in much more conservative churches than we're used to worshiping in, who are yearning for this kind of faith and who have been quite silent, who are afraid that it may be ostracized or feeling like they might not be Christian enough or what have you, and they just really got very excited when they found us coming through town, and also, of course, a lot of people who already would have resonated with the Phoenix Affirmations and who weren't quite as conservative theologically, but feeling very, very lonely and saying, wow, you're really walking for us, thank you, and you're giving us new hope.
For me, there is no one single thing. There are many, many singular events, but it's the people. It's the people that we met. It's the people that I walked with. It is the sense of all the people who are on this phone conversation right now, and how we are all connected by something that is tangible and yet cannot be described. And that extends to all of those people we encountered along the way. And that, for me, is what will forever stick out.
Well, I guess for me, it's kind of hard because I feel the things that are most striking and jump out to me aren't necessarily my favorite parts. So, like, one of my favorite parts were probably spending time with, like, my family that came in for D.C., getting to hang out with Katie and talking with Chris when he walked with us that one day. And I really loved staying in Lawrence, Kansas, the two college students, because reflecting back on that, I realized that it was, like, one of the few times on the walk where I just felt at home, versus, like, feeling, like, homestay, like, always having to be on, like, I could just, like, sink in and be myself and just hang out with these people, and I didn't feel like a burden or sort of, like, a weird outsider, which is really cool and powerful for me. But then, again, like, some of the most striking things for me are just, like, sitting in some of these churches or going to speak at some of these churches and just looking around and feeling so out of place, and how uncomfortable that made me feel, and how that made me, like, worry about what's going on with Christianity in the future if I, who obviously have been going to church my whole life, feel uncomfortable in these places.
And can you just tell me a little bit about what kinds of things made you feel uncomfortable?
Okay, sort of the very, like, a lot of times you got hugs and stuff, which was nice, but I was either the youngest person or there were, like, real little children there, or there'd be, like, one kid that's, like, in middle school or high school, and they're like, oh, look, there's someone your age, and it's like, okay, thanks. And, like, when we go to a church service and stuff, the music, it just, like, what I really like to connect with in services is music. That's, like, my favorite part because it's short and I don't stop paying attention while it's going on. A real short attention span. But a lot of it was just hymns and just, like, I didn't feel a part of the service. And even, like, one of my favorite services on the walk was, it was a hymn sing, and, like, but I actually got to choose one of the hymns and I felt like I was a part of it versus, like, an outsider or someone, like, sort of at a, like, people coming to look at you like you're in a zoo, which made me uncomfortable a lot of the time. When people would come up and say, like, I'm so glad you're on this walk because of your age. And, like, yeah, that's nice, but I'd hear other people on the walk getting compliments like, wow, like, what you said, it really connected with me, or I'm so, like, you're walking for me, blah, blah, blah. All these really nice things, and I would just get, like, wow, I'm really glad you're 18. Cool. A lot of control over my age. I don't know. It was a lot of factors, and I think me being really homesick was definitely a big one.
Well, Well, thanks for sharing that. I know it's not always easy to share that stuff, so I appreciate it. You know, for me, this isn't about my favorite memory. It's not about the thing that was most memorable. It's not about any of those in particular things, but I cannot remember the walk without thinking about Mark Creekwater. And when I think about Mark Creekwater, the thing that comes to mind, there are two. Number one was his zealous, the way he would walk, and that he, when people were walking one shift, he was walking two shifts, and he was just like sometimes like just a walking machine, probably to his detriment sometimes. But the thing that most stands out from Mark was his absolute commitment to drinking creek water, and the numbers of times as a film crew we'd be off and we'd be watching the group walking down the road, and there would be Mark down in some creek somewhere, you know, scooping up some water and, you know, looking at it to make sure that he wasn't drinking any spiders or something, you know, for the sake of the spiders, not for his own sake. So that's always something that makes me smile when I think about Mark on the walk.
Well, that's Ray Gentry again. There's one thing I'd like to say in thinking after I made my little initial comment. One thing that really got me going and turned me on is whenever we had a meeting at a church and it turned out to be an ecumenical type thing, where there's three or four or five other churches involved, the workings of the meetings and the people were so beautiful to see. There was so much more involvement than we just went to a single church and presented our program to that church. You could see these people saying, "Oh, you're my neighbor. I work with you or whatever. Oh, you guys do this, you do that," and it just had such a big impact, and it was very a very warm thing, I felt. And I wished we could do more of that.
I would say the state that I probably remember the most is New Mexico. It was early on in the walk. It still felt like there was tons of possibility. We spent a lot of time just out on these wide open roads, really just talking to each other and still getting to know each other. And we got to go past a very large array, which I just loved. And we had such a great reception in Albuquerque and Santa Fe. And then we met people like Mary and Bob in Santa Fe, who were so enthusiastic about what we were doing and who were already embodying a whole bunch of the Phoenix affirmations in how they live and how they connect with people. And then they had us all for dinner, just kind of, you know, with a day's notice, they rounded up a bunch of other people and had them for dinner, and you could just see the sparks of people connecting around that table. I thought that was really great. And then the day off that we had at Sumner Lake, that was one of the better days off that we had, I thought, in the whole trip. It was so relaxing, and the group of us went swimming and just took a real day of rest, and that was, we needed that.
This is Marilyn. I think, you know, most of the homes that we stayed in were upper class, you know, very nice. But I have a memory of staying in with one woman in Missouri, and she was a librarian and had a daughter just starting college. And another in high school, and I remember driving to her house, she was driving, and she said, "I hope you don't mind, but I don't have air conditioning." And you know, she lived in a small, modest home, and I've often thought about that. You know, it's easy to invite people into your home when you have a huge home and it's very nice and upper middle class. It's not quite so easy to do that when you live on a lower economic scale. And you know, I always remember that she did that anyway.
What were the major ways that the walk was successful? And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth and say it was successful, but, you know, what were the successes? But I'd also like to know from you, where did you feel that it came up short? Maybe where were your expectations not not met. Were there any failures too? I'd like to hear about both the highs and the lows of successes and failures.
This is Megan. I helped do some follow-up calls earlier this year to churches where we had stayed, and a lot of people that I talked to, when I asked them what was the effect of our visit, I felt like the successes were the ones where people said, well, it really taught us that we weren't alone, that there are a lot of other people out there thinking the way we do, and you know, here's your group coming clear across the country and reinforcing a lot of things that we believe, but we thought we were the only ones, and you showed us that we weren't, and that not only were you out there, Crosswalk, but also you knew all these other churches, some of them in our own area, and you brought them to our church, or we came to their church or something, and so that felt like a success. And then some of them said, yeah, and after you left, we had a Phoenix Affirmation study group, and we're doing this, and we're doing that, and, you know, some congregations really took it and ran with it, and that felt like a success. Those were fun phone calls.
This is Rebecca, and I felt like the walk was successful every time we had a chance to talk to anyone, whether or not we know what happened after that conversation. And, I mean, there was times when the success could really be felt. Some of the services we had where people were so excited, you know, you just see a group of people really jazzed. Times when you met with someone one-on-one. There were some services that maybe after I left them, I would have felt in my mind that it wasn't much of a success. It felt more like a failure. If we had few in attendance and not much was said. But I think it's really hard to measure some of those things, because even in the places where people were quiet and didn't engage, you know, maybe we got someone thinking, and maybe later something came of it. But if I were to look at, you know, one measurement of success, I would say that all of us who started this walk finished this walk. And I think that's a major accomplishment when you think of all the things that can go wrong and how hard it is to be gone and in such close quarters for so long. And I think that was a testament to, I think, all of us having a strong desire to complete and really working hard to communicate with each other and love each other. And, you know, we truly were a family. And that is something that I will always hold in my heart as long as I live.
Well, this is Merrill. I'm always amazed at how many people I run into in Phoenix, and I say, you know, I went on Crosswalk, and they said, oh, yeah, I know about that, and, you know, in the most unlikely places. So I think from that standpoint, that's a measure of success for me. And the other thing is how much it changed me for the better.
Well, this is Ray Gentry again. One of the things that happened that I thought was great, along the road, my hair grows pretty fast, and I needed to get a haircut. And the break just happened to be just right in a certain town where the walkers were doing good, going through a small town, so I had time to whip into a haircut place. One that had a big enough parking lot for the RV. And I go in to get a haircut, and it happens. I didn't know it at the time, but they started talking about who I was and where I was from, what was going on. And I told them about Crosswalk, about the Phoenix Affirmation, and that they're all based on love, and you can't go wrong with love. And this guy in the other chair who was getting a haircut asked me, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, actually, we're putting a little bit more love back into Christianity. I think I just said we're putting love into Christianity. And he said, well, it's always been there. I said, yeah, but I think a lot of people are not paying any attention to it. And we're kind of revitalizing that a bit. And it ended up he was a minister. And he thanked me for, you know, for being candid with my remarks and talking to him about it. And the real good news was I got a free haircut. But in the shortcomings, you ask for those also, Scott. I know it's awful hard after you've done something to think, oh, we should have known that. But somehow I think maybe we could have known a little more before we went out on the road. I think we stumbled a little in places that I don't think we should have stumbled. But that's just Ray Gentry, I guess.
Well, like what kinds of situations? I mean, what is kind of a logistic thing, or just having our act together, or in
Well, the logistics. I worked on logistics for a while, and our endeavor was to get from point A to point B to point C, and you know, get a comfortable route. Don't go way down through the South Bible Belt where we get in trouble, and the straight route and things like that. We should have maybe been working a little more on what to expect from people and how to how to handle various situations, which we did some of that. I'm not saying, you know, everything was wrong, but it just seemed to me like we could have been, maybe it's because I was in the RV and you guys were out there meeting the people, but it just seemed like we could have been maybe a little better prepared with, I'm not sure, whatever, but...
You mean our plans were always kind of shifting and...
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, there's a lot of that, which I can appreciate. You have to do that. You know, you don't know how to build a ship until after you build a ship.
I think it's interesting how many people saw what we were doing. I'm kind of following up on what you were saying, Ray, and just said, you guys are crazy, because there was such an enormity to the experience of doing this and pulling it off. And frankly, you know, what I saw, Ray, which I think supports what you're saying in some ways, I'm not sure that any of us recognized the enormity of what we were doing, the importance of what we were doing, and also just how incredibly complicated it was. And one of the things that I want to lift up is that, you know, Megan, a few days before the event went off, you know, a lot of people probably don't know this, but a few days before the event went off, I know, you know, Eric and Rebecca were looking at each other and going, there's no way that we can handle, you know, all of this stuff that we've got to do, plus these contacts and stuff, because it was just piling on. And Megan just, you know, jumped in as a force and, you know, really helped make some of that stuff happen in a way that, had she not been there, I know it would have been much more chaotic that we saw.
Yeah, kudos to Megan for all the logistics she did, or else we would have really been out in left field, yes.
That was funny, because when I arrived in Phoenix on the Wednesday the 12th, pretty much straight off the train, straight off the plane, I got brought into the church, and I think Eric was the one that said, oh, Rebecca and I were talking, we want you to be the logistics person on the road, and I kind of went, oh, okay, what does that entail? Oh, you'll be fine, you know.
Yeah, to support what I was saying about us not knowing maybe as much, the people we were talking to who knew we were coming and said they had a sense of what it was all about, there were several. You would be there in a certain location for a couple of days, and after a couple, two or three days, they'd see you and they'd start honking and waving and everything like, oh, I got it now.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some people, we made a presentation to them, and they drove out of the way 30, 40 miles to catch up with us and walk with us a little bit, saying, you know, I thought I knew what it was all about, but after your presentation, I really feel much better about everything, and I want to come out and walk with you a little bit. And things like that happening, that's what made me think, I don't know how we could have done better beforehand. We gave it our best shot, I'm sure.
Well, I would say one of the things that I think we were hoping at the beginning is that by the time we got to the end, we would have more people... maybe more people on board, and so we had a really good turnout at the final event, but I think there was initially sort of an expectation that it would just catch on like wildfire, and I think, you know, looking back, that it just takes a little more time. I think it will catch on, and a lot of the people that I talk to, because I continue to do presentations, I get invited to churches, I facilitate, you know, study groups and stuff, and a lot of the people that I talk to say, oh, that's what Crosswalk America is. Wow, that's really great. And that kind of Christianity I could sign on to. So I think there's still, you know, plenty of fertile ground out there, and the mission is more important than ever. It's just that we were a little overambitious in thinking how many people would hear about us just in the space of the walk.
This is Chris. One of the things that was interesting for me, I mean, I haven't really, for the people that I do see, I haven't even had much of an opportunity to talk about this. But for me being, everybody knows that I was like the non-Christian of the group. And not only that, but shamefully, I was kind of an anti-Christian bigot for many, many years. Only a couple of years before this walk even happened, I kind of saw the error in my ways. I thought it was one of the most amazing things I've ever done or experienced or saw. And I learned so much. Like every single time, you know, I was at a church event or there was a Bible study, I just watched, paid attention, and try to like soak in as much as I could. That I can't believe how much I've learned, and I'm so interested in the whole faith in general, just because of especially the country that I live in. This is, you know, a predominantly a Christian nation for the people who believe in that faith. So, you know, to understand what Christianity is paramount for somebody that lives in this society. And another thing that I think is interesting that I am in, my circle of influence, the people that I hang out with the most and the people that I'm most in contact with are non-Christians. And when you talk to them, when I bring stuff up about this, a lot of them still have like kind of a negative connotation about Christianity, and I'm so glad that I'm able to sit there and be in these people's, you know, being around them to say, no, you've got it wrong. You've got it all wrong. You're only hearing a very, very loud voice. You're not getting a chance to hear the majority of the voice, though. And to be able to have like different situations with people where I can talk to them about the Christians that I know and the Christian journey that I experienced, and let them know that you have to understand. You can't be you're being ignorant, just like you're saying that these people are ignorant. Yeah, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, you're calling them ignorant, you're calling them hate mongers, but you're turning around and using the same thing that they use against people, which is predominantly of a good society, a good community, and that they need to kind of, like, look into it more. They need to see what's out there. If anything, not to, like, convert and become a Christian, but just to understand that what they see on the media isn't what's actually happening. And when it comes to the walk itself, I love the piece with Robin Myers that I've seen over and over again by, you know, not only videotaping in it, but seeing it in post, the mustard seed, the whole concept of the mustard seed, and that, you know, we may have not had, like, this ginormous event at the end that we might have wanted, but each individual was there, and each individual that we came across, we have to think not only about them, but their circle of influence. And if we have influenced them in any way, what will they be able to influence in the future? And besides that, I think when the documentary comes out, that'll be to have people see that, and to have Walkers or Scott be able to go out and talk to people at festivals or wherever it's going to be shown. And then just to get it out there, I mean, there's so many people that I talk to that, you know, as soon as it's ready to go, like, I want to buy copies galore and just, like, pass them out, just to spread the word, because people need to know, and people that are outside of the faith need to realize that it's not bad, and they need to turn off the TV and all the information that they're getting. And they need to actually pay attention, open their eyes up to what's actually out there. And that's one of the most beautiful things that I really came away with was, and also humbling, just learning as much as I did, and none of that, but be able to be like an emissary and come back and talk to people that aren't in that circle and let them know the actual beauty of the Christian community.
This is Eric Elmas, and I think that one of the great successes of the walk was the fact that we went across the country and met face-to-face with over 11,000 people and that we weren't simply proclaiming something, even though we had something wonderful to proclaim, but we were listening. at the same time and hearing stories and hopes and dreams and praying with people and worshiping with them. And to me, it really changed a lot of our understandings of what's going on at the grassroots in Christianity in America, and really opened a whole window into how much yearning for a more progressive, more inclusive and compassionate and intellectually honest faith there is out there. And I remember as we were blogging, someone commented during the walk, I think one of the most revolutionary things you guys may accomplish in this walk is to rewrite the story of Christian faith in America at the grassroots, and showing that it's not what it appears, I mean, in the news, but not only that, but that you guys have the credibility now from actually having walked and met with so many people to back up what your claims are. And I think that the film is going to show that, the book is going to show that as well. And the other piece of success I would look at is post-walk, the interest in what went on and what is going on did not just simply die once we held that final event. And in fact, just one little example, our blog traffic, we were up to 500 unique visitors per day during the walk, which is a pretty healthy rate of people, particularly in the progressive Christian movement. That's a very healthy number. Well, since the walk, that number did not decrease. In fact, it is steadily increased. And, you know, in January, we were at double that number, at 5,000. And the last, this month, we're running at 1,400 unique visitors per day at the blog. So the interest has not only held in what we're doing and what we're representing, but has increased substantially. In terms of failures, I think that the one thing that I would point to is also prompts something that the crosswalk is now getting into, which I think the failure was also part of what I think is success. And that was, I think a lot of us, as Megan alluded to, kind of thought that we would get our 60 seconds on CNN and our 2 minutes on Good Morning America and kind of bring this lightning rod, be a lightning rod, and just spark this huge national conversation on faith, which never really happened. We got some great publicity in local and regional areas, but never really interested in the national media other than PBS for about a 15-second or 20-second blurb. And they flat out, you know, basically said that unless we're burning down churches or, you know, doing something just really outrageous, there's really not a lot of interest in people who are going out walking for love of God, neighbor, and self, and not hating their enemies at the same time. And it really opened our eyes to the fact that we can't rely on CNN to tell our story for us. We can't rely on Good Morning America or 60 Minutes to do it. First of all, they're not interested. Second of all, when they do get interested, half the time they get the story wrong, or have to quote-unquote balance you with some... is somebody who represents the exact opposite point of view that you're trying to get out. We really can't rely on the traditional media to tell our story. We need to become the media if we're willing to do that. And as a result of walking, it really opened our eyes to how connected we are as a country through the internet, and even in the most rural areas and people who are older. So much of the country is wired and wired at levels where they can receive video, and so that experience really prompted us to look very seriously at doing video casting and creating programming that can reach out to the world very cheaply and efficiently, and with quality programming that actually tells the story the way we feel it should be told.
I think, for me personally, it was very successful in that I learned a lot about myself, and sort of like what I'm capable of, and strengths I have, and weaknesses I have, and how to use them both in an intelligent and useful and powerful manner. But for the group as a whole, I think it was great that we took the risks that we did, and we, like Eric and Rebecca and everyone else has said, like, we put our feet to what we believed, and really walked what we were saying, and I think that was really powerful. I, like Megan, was sort of disappointed that it didn't make as big a splash as it could have, or maybe we thought that it was
going to. And I do agree with Eric in that we can't rely on the media that is owned by five companies, and, I mean, just the issues with it in general, in that it's not a reliable source for us or any other progressive movement, regardless of faith or secularism. And so I do think that there were some successes, but also I feel like it failed in certain ways in connecting with people that weren't in the church we were staying with, or especially we didn't really go anywhere except churches. And I think that, like, it would have been a lot harder to plan other ways, and I understand why we didn't do the other things, but I wish that we had gone to different sorts of venues to talk about, especially since, like you said, this is a nation that is influenced by Christian thought, although, albeit, thankfully, not a Christianly ruled nation or anything like that, but in that we didn't make that connection, and that also we did not connect with the youth aspect at all throughout the whole thing. And another problem, failure, I felt, was that the walk wasn't diverse. It wasn't diverse class-wise, really. It wasn't diverse racially. Politically, it wasn't very diverse. I just wish that we had more perspective talking about their beliefs. And I'm not saying, like, we needed those on the core walk group. I think it would have been great. But when we met with people, it felt like sort of same sort of community that we kept going to. And I just wish that we had sort of made that effort to reach out and talk with the different people that we missed that weren't in those churches that we stayed with.
Actually, there was a great deal of effort that got put into that, but there was less interest from those communities in welcoming us too.
Which there may be something to that, you know, we're looking at a movement, you know, that appeals to people who are maybe a lot like we are, and in our thinking, I mean, Katrina has a point that, you know, we need as we're moving along to be continuing to think about those people, whether or not they join us and walk with us or not, but how do we, you know, continue to incorporate them and be of service to them.
One thing, this is Ray Gentry again, one thing that needs to be remembered here, Katrina and Megan are kind of talking about big splashes would have been good. You know, we're out there trying to do good things, and we'd like people to applaud and say, oh, yeah, that's terrific. What about the ripple effect? I've been talking about this all throughout the whole walk. I think as we go along, we're building up something that's kind of falling us, and it's yet to come. And a real good example is Tracy's church there in Hertford, Texas, where they didn't know whether to accept us or not. It was more of an issue on the vegetarian beef-eater question than it was religion. When we left, I had a good sense, giving Tracy a hug and everything, I had a good sense that her people are sitting up paying attention and they're talking to each other about this now. So it's still coming down the pike, I think. So I think it was a tremendous success. There's going to be a lot of things happening that we are not, you know, it's not put in the press or on the tube or on the air or anything, but by golly, we did some good things as we went down the road.
Well, Ray, I think that the increase in the blog traffic is a good example of exactly what you're saying. It was kind of the ripple effect, or you also talked about the sonic boom, where the
right,
plane
yeah.
goes by and you don't hear it, but then there's this boom, and that's happening. And also, we're getting all kinds of emails in both of the blog site and personal addresses from people who have only recently heard about it, or and who are reading the Phoenix Affirmation's book or doing Phoenix Affirmation's Bible studies and so forth from all around the country.
This is Megan. I'd like to pick up on something that Katrina was saying. I am right now facilitating a Phoenix Studies study group on Sunday mornings at my church. And one of the things that people in there keep coming back to is, how do you learn to have that kind of conversation with how do you have that conversation with people who don't believe the same things that you believe? because they want to have those conversations, but they just don't quite know how to start or how to hold their ground. You know, how to present the things that they know and believe, and also be respectful about listening and have enough knowledge and enough background about their own faith to be able to say, you know, well, this is what I believe, and let's hear about what you believe. You know, like you go through in Chapter 10 of your Phoenix Affirmations book where Linda and Janet have that conversation about, you know, oh, well, I believe this about creation, and oh, I believe that, and they listen to each other. Or Rebecca, you were working on that with a friend of yours through email, trying to figure out how do I have this conversation? How do I respond to the things that she's saying? And a lot of people in my Phoenix Affirmations class are saying the same thing. How do we have those conversations? And how did you do that out on the road? And I'm realizing, well, we actually ended up mostly talking with people who were already signing on to what we were talking about. For the most part. I mean, I think we had a really interesting session with that minister in St. Louis when we did Theology on Tap. I wish more people had been as brave as he was to come into a room of people who clearly didn't agree with him in terms of religious beliefs, and yet we could all sit down at a table together and talk about it.
Actually, In terms of the number of people, it didn't wind up, you know, as I thought it would or hoped it would. But, you know, I'm beginning to think that maybe that isn't a bad thing. I think it'd be a shame. I don't think it'd be a good thing if all Christians believed as I do. I think there's a, you know, diversity in belief is a good thing, and I'm kind of getting used to the fact now that I'm getting used to the fact that I'd be a heretic if for most Christians. Would consider me that. And maybe that's not a bad thing, because if you're in the majority, then how are you prophetic? How can you be prophetic? And I think that's one of Crosswalk's missions, is to hold up a prophetic standard or statement to the rest of Christianity. Does that make any sense to anyone?
Yeah.
Definitely. Though we consider you a heretic, too.
Well, I am.
Touché.
Yes, this is Brad. I think that both positions are accurate. I think that there are a lot of things that we did not or were not able to do because we didn't either have the time or the energy or the resources, be that people or finance, to adequately address those issues. So I think some, and I've heard three of the whole group, but you know what Katrina outlined, I think is true. I think the other side of it is also that success is a very subjective term. So when we talk about success, each and every one of us are talking about something different. And I remember saying in a board meeting shortly before we left on the walk, when we were so uncertain about if we were going to have the money, if we were going to be able to do this, I said, for me, the most important thing is that when we wind up in Washington, D.C., I need to be able to believe that what we did was credible. So do I believe we raised a credible witness for the values that we have espoused as Crosswalk America? Yes, I do. So I think that we did everything perfectly or even as well as we could have? Not at all. You know, if I could create the perfect world or make something happen exactly the way I would love to, well, everything would be different. But then again, it would be just my world. So I really think that success as a question about the walk for me is, were we credible? And yes, we were credible. If we're talking about success for the long-term goals of why we walked, we've got a lot of work left to do.
Well, another highlight of the walk for me, and I think everybody else on it, was every time Brad showed back up, he was like the Energizer Bunny.
Yep.
When he showed up, everybody started laughing and smiling and just felt better about everything and just start anew each day that he showed up.
And he taught us songs.
Yep.
And hand motions.
And we filmed those songs.
Yes, I know. I'm still praying to be able to forgive you.
You know, one of the things that really stood out to me, and this is kind of a small thing, but I thought it was so interesting with the group because I really believe that there was a, you know, there was a reason that each of the people was there, all of the people who were on this phone call and other people who were involved in the walk. Each had their part that they played, and we even learned and understood that more as things went along. But one of the things that I thought was really touching is that, you know, even 18, 19 weeks into the walk, how much all of you were committed to walking with different people all the time. And there wasn't like, well, you know, I just can't walk with him or I can't walk with her. But I remember even like in week 18, there was this real interest. It's like, well, you know, I want to make sure I get a chance to walk with Megan. I want to make sure I get a chance to walk with Merrill. I want to make sure I get a chance to walk with Eric and Mark and Brad. And I just thought, wow, you know, 18 weeks later, it didn't divide up. It wasn't like, well, you know, Katrina only walks with this person, or, and it could have. I mean, that could have been kind of a routine. So I just thought that was really cool.
Well, one of the things that I liked about the walks was the different rhythm to the week that it brought from compared to anything else I've ever done. And the amount of time that we had to talk to each other. And, you know, sometimes we'd be walking along and talking and somebody would say, well, and to make a long story short, it's like, oh, no, we've got 4.5 hours. Go ahead and tell me the long version. And I really loved that sense of group that we had. And I still feel very much. I miss every single person in this group. And, in fact, you know, I'm moving down to Berkeley. I keep thinking, well, maybe Mark will show up. maybe I'll see Mark.
He's on the way.
Well, that would be great, you know, and I would look forward to that. But to have that kind of intense 20 weeks together, all of us, and I just really cherish that. And I know people, towards the end, people kept asking us, are you really looking forward to this being done? And most of you were saying, yes. I was like, no, I don't want this to end. I'm going home to no job, and I'm in no hurry. So I was really glad that I did the drive back. That was exactly what I needed to just kind of unwind and kind of see the whole trip back in reverse. But I miss all of you. And somebody asked me the other day, Catherine Foote asked me on Easter when I reminded her that it was, you know, Easter. That it was last Easter day that we started. She said, "Do you miss it?" And I said, "Every day." And that's true. I miss all of you. I miss being out on the road. I miss walking. I try to walk to church on Sunday mornings, which is about 6 or 7 miles, just to kind of remind my body, oh yeah, I used to do this. So I miss it.
Yeah, I miss those early morning breakfasts with you, Megan.
I have to tell you, I'm having a grape nut dinner right now.
Some things just don't change.
No.
One of the things that I wanted to say, kind of get back to what something that Megan and Katrina said earlier, first with Megan, by facilitating that talk with that group at your church, there's this one person that I work with now, and albeit it's a 17-year-old kid, so... but he is, like, as far right as possible. Liberals ought to be ashamed of themselves, and I'm a communist, constantly.
Well, you are.
But I seriously believe that this kid also has like a man crush on me too, because he just won't leave me alone. But it's like, I mean this kid is so far right wing. Like, when I talk to him sometimes and have a conversation with him, the things he says, my reply is, how many people can your father fit in the furnace in the cellar of your home? You know, because the things that he says are just so, like, heinous, you know? But I found that, like, I always think of Meryl, you know, when I get into a conversation. it's from the... Don't take assumptions from that. I know it's hard, but please try not to. The situation in St. Louis with the protesters and how he went up to one of them and said, you know, I love you, and what they replied to him. I always think of that. And in a way, it's like, it's harder. It's one of the hardest things to do when you hear somebody that just sounds what you would consider to be extremely ignorant. But what I want to do is sometimes just go put my own head through a wall, just to stop hearing it, you know. But you kind of have to put yourself almost like in a zen state of mind to really, like, handle the person and realize that they're human and that they're not perfect and they haven't had all the experiences I've had, and they haven't even had any of the most of the experience that I've heard of from other people. You know, I mean, this is a kid who is a total rich kid. He has, like, a mansion for a house, and he doesn't know what it's like to work his fingers to the bone, you know, because he gets pretty much everything his heart desires. So I try not to take some of the things that he says too much, you know. And I have conversations with him. I see this kid for 8 hours every Saturday, and he doesn't stop talking. So I have that practice with somebody like him. What Katrina said earlier, kind of about, and I've been thinking about this too, about maybe some, we didn't have the time, like, hit every single place, and we didn't have, you know, a great diversity in our group. And I think sometimes that, like, something that Crosswalk could do, because when you go down to Phoenix Affirmations, a lot of, every single affirmation can attribute to just a person. And that person doesn't have to be Christian. That person could be an atheist. It doesn't have to have any religion or whatever. But when you look at it on a human level of things that are happening in our world, and speak out on them. You're gonna, when you speak out and you put your foot down and you say something, yes, you can get backlash. You don't, and like how Scott says, he doesn't use curse words because they lose their effect after a while. You don't want to constantly, like, speak out on something. Like, for instance, the video game that came out. You don't want to have a press conference for everything because it might lose its thing. But to truly speak out on something when there's oppression, when poor people are being treated a certain way, when people of color are being treated a certain way, when people of another faith are being treated in a certain way that doesn't correspond with how the Christians that follow the Crosswalk ideology, to just stand up and say, that is wrong. And I think if you start doing that, and that you're going to get more support, that there's a way to ally yourself with people of other faiths, of other nationalities and stuff like that, without taking away the fact that you're a Christian group. When you see something that is terribly wrong, that is happening to a certain community, whether it's in the country or it's in the world, to stand up and say, we as Crosswalk America not agree with this. This is wrong, and something needs to be done about this. And to create a dialogue about a situation. I mean, you can just go down the list of the Phoenix Affirmations and pick out something that has to do with social justice or the environment or somebody here or somebody there. And if you speak out on it as an organization, that will not only, yes, it will get people that may say something about you, but if you're somebody who isn't Christian that's being oppressed and you're speaking out in defense for them, well, that's somebody that's going to look at Christians in a whole new light. And that's just kind of the experience that I've got by talking to non-Christians. When they hear that information, it's like a light is finally turned on. They're like, really? That those people exist? Yes, they do. You just have to pay attention. So if you're able to, like, take a stand for somebody, which you do, make it more noticeable, that people are going to start seeing that, and they're going to respect that, and they're going to want to stand with it.
Sure. What it was that I felt that it was imperative that I do something, and here all these protesters were out there, and I wasn't quite sure what I could do, and eventually I just came to the conclusion that what I needed to do was tell them all that I loved them, regardless of our differences, especially our different beliefs and that. And so I did it.
So you the response and, you got back from that one protester?
Oh, the one protester that said, and I hate you real good?
Yeah.
He did. Well, that was, you know, that was her viewpoint, I guess. And the thing is that I didn't take it personally, because I believe that she probably feels that way about everyone that doesn't believe exactly as she does.
I have a quick question for Meryl. After saying I love you to all those protesters and having the one response come back, you know, well, I hate you real good, did that make it harder or more easy for you to try to do that again with someone else?
I think it'd make it easier. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity, but I think the thing that it taught me was that it worked. And what I mean by that is that it worked for me because I did something and I expressed love and you know, which I think is one of the Christian messages. So yeah, I think it'd be easy to do that again.
One of the things that we talked about the next day, because the next day when we were walking, I asked people, what does the kingdom of heaven on earth look like? And what I was thinking of is how stuck she seemed to be in some kind of a hell, that in this place of hate and anger. And she just, you know, some of the other protesters we could talk to and have conversations with and, you know, be reasonable with. And with her, she just seemed really set and stuck and angry, and that seemed like she was in some kind of box or something.
I know there was a Love One Out conference, which is the focus on the families. Sort of way of pushing their belief, which is that people don't have to be gay. And then I know some people who were associated with Crosswalk went to that. I wonder if the experience with the protesters informed kind of how you acted at that.
I was part of that, and I do think it informed me in that. I was really, really struck by Meryl's gesture, and I thought it was a very brave and beautiful thing. And when we protested the Love One Out here in Phoenix, it was sort of a different setting because the folks were inside the church having their meetings, and we were just walking back and forth with our signs. But the difference in how that was conducted is there weren't chants yelled at the people inside. There were chants, or at least hateful chants. It was, God loves you, God loves everyone, we love everyone. And I thoroughly enjoyed the opportunity to walk for a couple hours and yell out and chant positive, affirming messages. I think that feels good to people. And so I do think it's really important for people when they take a stand that, and that's why I'm so thrilled that we have affirmations, that when you say things in a positive way and stand up for what you believe in, not trying to put the other person down, really is the way to make change happen in this world. And it was a wonderful experience. I thought, boy, I hope I have a lot more opportunities to do this, because I think it mattered, and hopefully someone in there that maybe got forced to come to that conference by someone who thinks they're doing the right thing for them, that loves them, but that maybe will see people outside that don't think they have to change themselves to be loved by God, and that it might really matter for someone in there. But meanwhile, for those of us walking back and forth, it just felt good to be positive and loving and with a group of people who want better things for the people that were in the conference.
This is Brad. There was a 15-year-old boy. His father and stepmother had brought him from San Diego to Phoenix for this conference. And they were outside toward the end, and I got pulled over by some folks who were talking with them. The young kid was wanting to meet someone who was gay. So they asked me to go over, and I talked with him for a little while. And one of the neat things was that his father got a chance to talk to those of us who were outside, as well as listen to the things being said inside. And we were able to present a different voice. And if there's only one 15-year-old child who's affected out of that, then that's a very powerful thing. Besides, it was really fun to watch Rebecca go, hey, hey, ho, ho, homophobia's got to go.
And Brad didn't need a megaphone, believe it or not.
Has he ever needed one?
I don't think so.
I'm not even on the phone now.
We hear you all the way from wherever you are, Texas.
Texas.
Well, for the purposes of the podcast, we might want to update our listeners who may have been following Crosswalk America that Chris Brown is still off of cigarettes.
Hey!
Oh!
He's off of cigarettes and on to...
Toothpicks.
No.
Toothpicks and sunflower seeds.
Sunflower seeds. So he's the connection for sunflower seeds. If you need any of them, he's always got a big bag.
And the rest of us are now chain smokers. So.
Well, I think this was great, guys. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to, in a way, this is sort of like being back together again.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Maybe we should do more of this.
Yeah, I miss you guys. Eric and Scott, I'm really looking forward to you guys coming up in a couple weeks. I wish more people were coming. So I offer that invitation to anybody who wants to come.
Well, I'll come stay with you at your dorm in Berkeley.
Okay.
I'll find me a lot.
That'll raise a few eyebrows.